a transfer house in the yard of Castle Cameron. Linarala had used the circle in Lancaster to teleport us there, which was a relief. I'm not sure I could have handled a long ride, and I certainly couldn't teleport us myself. Barely able to speak, I whispered to Penny, knowing her sharp ears would hear me. "Don't let them see me." Nodding, she removed her cloak and draped it over me. If the guards outside the transfer house had any questions, they dropped them when they saw the look on her face. Soon, I was back in my bed. Linarala ran interference when we entered the house. Connell and Irene were both excited to see her. I'm sure they were curious about the large burden their mother was carrying. Minutes later, I was in my bed, staining the sheets with dirt and dried blood. Of our older children, only Moira was home. Despite my objections, Penny brought her in immediately after I was settled. With feedback sickness, I couldn't heal myself, and Penny seemed to feel that was important. Personally, I only wanted a dark hole to climb into. Moira and her spell twin Myra worked in tandem to fix my broken bones and seal my various wounds. I only had one serious cut, a slowly seeping stab wound in my side. I couldn't inspect it myself, but it must have been simple since it didn't take them long to finish dealing with it. If anything serious had been cut, I'd discover it in a few days. Dying from a gut wound was a horrible way to go. There was a lot they couldn't fix. The feedback sickness, the swelling and bruises, not to mention my broken pride. If experience was any guide, I'd be in bed for at least a week, if not longer. A lot of talking went on, but I ignored it until eventually they left. Penny stayed the longest, but eventually she decided to let me rest. The door closed, and I was alone, the room lit by a single candle. In the dim light, I lay staring at the ceiling, hating myself for my weakness, hating what had happened. I hadn't felt such shame since the day I'd been publicly flogged in Albemarle. That had faded with time, so it was hard to say for certain, but this felt worse. Exhausted, I closed my eyes, and despite my pain, I quickly fell asleep. My dreams were anything but pleasant. Once again, I watched the sword fall from her hand.
Mort, wake up.
I wasn't sure how long I'd slept, and in fact, I hadn't really been asleep. I just hadn't wanted to open my eyes. There was nothing good on the horizon for today, just more pain and guilt. Soft lips brushed my forehead.
Damn it, I know you're awake. Look at me.
None of it was her fault, I knew that. The blame rested squarely on the shoulders of one man, a man who should have died several thousand years ago when his own daughter put a blade through his back. But that wasn't how it felt. My heart wanted to claim responsibility. I'd never been one to blame others, no matter the circumstances. It had been my failure, my weakness, my shame. But that wasn't the worst of it. I'd failed before. The worst was seeing her go slack in his arms. None of it was rational. I'd explained that to myself over and over, each time I'd awoken from my nightmares. Taking a deep breath, I opened my eyes. I couldn't punish her for this, no matter how screwed up my head was. I had to be strong. I said, my voice hoarse. I forced a weak smile onto my lips, which hurt. Any movement of my facial muscles hurt. The bones were whole, but the tissue damage remained. Liquid brown eyes stared down at me, framed by a face that could only belong to an angel. Penny. Dark circles made it abundantly clear that she probably hadn't slept. Had she spent the night torturing herself? I didn't have a monopoly on self-doubt and recrimination.
I missed you, she said. You slept a long time.
How many times have we done this? I asked.
Too many, and every time feels worse than the last, she answered.
She was right. I nearly died too many times to remember, and every time it had been her smile waiting for me when I returned. She wasn't much better, though. I'd been the one to wait by the sickbed beside her on quite a few occasions. It was almost a ritual for us now. I'll be right as rain in a day or two. Penny's head was bowed, her face hidden.
Elise says there will probably be permanent damage unless there's something more you can do.
Elise Thornbear was a mundane healer and the mother of my late friend, Dorian. She knew more about healing and medicines than anyone I'd ever met. If she'd said it, it was probably true. Once I get over the feedback sickness, I can fix the rest, I reassured her. One of the great benefits of being an archmage was that injuries to the self were easier to fix than almost anything else. So long as I could focus on the memory of what my healthy self had been like, I could restore my body. In fact, the body I had now wasn't even my original one. It had been produced using a significantly riskier process by Gareth Galen. At one point I looked like his twin. I had to modify it to return to my accustomed face and form. I could easily do so again once I could use my power.
Good,
she said, nodding.
I don't think I could make it without you.
She squeezed my hand so tightly it was painful. I could hear the depression in her voice, so I tried a joke.
Don't worry, I'll be fine. I might even use the opportunity to get rid of this belly, maybe add some more muscle.
She flinched, and I felt it through her grip on my hand. Inadvertently, I'd struck a nerve. Or was it an accident? Had my remark been born out of some subconscious desire to hurt her?
About what happened,
she began. I interrupted her.
I'm sorry. It was my fault.
Her breath hissed between her teeth angrily.
Shut up. None of it was your fault.
I lost, I said simply.
We didn't go there to fight. None of it was your choice,
she responded bitterly.
Then Arala told me what happened. You'd already won. You hurt yourself to keep from killing him.
I was weak, and he played on that weakness, I answered. He anticipated my hesitation, and he used it to crush me like a bug. And then... I stopped, unable to say the words. After a second, I tried again.
And then he... And then I couldn't protect you.
Just stop, she ordered.
I love you because you aren't a murdering monster. Don't pretend your kindness is a weakness. We wouldn't be here if you were any other way. If anyone was weak, it's me.
No. And then her tears began to trickle down her nose, dripping onto the bed next to me.
I couldn't stop him. No, I could have, but I didn't. I should have put that sword straight through his withered black heart.
You were scared.
No, and yes, I was scared, but I faced worse. I wasn't afraid for my life. I knew he wasn't going to kill me. I was paralyzed, but not by fear. It's like my body betrayed me. I couldn't fight him.
The self-loathing in her words was so strong it burned my ears.
Penny, you did the right thing,
I insisted.
You couldn't have killed him. The Crytek would have killed us. You knew if you stabbed him, we would both die.
That's not it, she said, choking out the words.
I didn't know that. I wasn't thinking about that. There was no thought at all. I was horrified, scared you might be dying. What he did to you was awful, but when he grabbed me, I... All of that just vanished.
Suddenly a thought occurred to me, and everything made sense.
Penny, do you remember when I told the kids about his life story?
What? She said, sounding confused and angry at the change in subject.
Some of it. Why does it matter? I wasn't there for all of it.
He raped over a dozen women, but not by force. He used his power to manipulate their bodies and emotions, I told her. It made perfect sense now.
You said only a centaur like Moira could do that.
There was a hopeful sound in her voice.
Only they can control people's minds, but any mage can induce sensations, emotions. Back then, Tyrion had his way with those women by inducing a powerful feeling of lust. Whatever you felt, it wasn't you. It was him screwing with your head.
The air left her lungs suddenly as she exhaled, a weight having been lifted from her shoulders. Then her lips were against mine. After a moment, she pulled back, relief written in her features.
That's so evil. I was sick with guilt. I haven't slept since we returned.
I smiled and squeezed her hand, wishing I could sit up and hold her.
He screwed with both our heads, one way or another.
Penny clenched one hand in a tight fist until the knuckles turned white.
I despise that bastard. How can such filth survive in this world? I've never wanted to kill someone so badly in my life.
The fury in her eyes was real, yet it comforted me. I had never loved anyone the way I loved her, and every year, every day, the feeling seemed to grow stronger. Despite all the shit life threw at us, we talked for a while longer, but our conversation was more relaxed now, our thoughts no longer dark with guilt and shame. After a bit, she helped me up so I could relieve my overburdened bladder, something else she'd had to help me with in the past.
She'd nursed me back to health so many times. Later, she left, but she leaned down to give me another kiss first. I felt the weight of her pendant fall against my chest, the silver pendant I'd made ages ago to protect her from the Shigrath. Darkness descended over my thoughts once more, but I kept smiling until she left.
The next day was worse than the first. Bruises are like that. They fool you the first day, make you think perhaps it won't be too bad, but as soon as you lower your guard, they pounce. I could hardly move, and when I did, it was only to relieve myself. My urine was dark brown, a propitious color. My entire family took turns hovering over me, watching me breathe, sleep, and continually trying to force unrealistic amounts of water down my throat. All part of Elise's sadistic plan to keep my kidneys functioning until they had a chance to recover. I'd always known she had it in for me. She knew I was the mastermind behind the theft of her blueberry tarts, which Dorian had nobly taken the blame for. I told everyone who would listen that she was trying to kill me, but they paid me no heed. The second day, Rose appeared. Lady Rose Thornbear, or more officially, Lady Hightower, was an old friend. She'd been married to my friend Dorian, and she'd been through dark times with Penny and me. I trusted her as much as anyone in my family. Honestly, in my mind, she was family. I didn't trust her today. "What are you doing here?" I demanded when she crossed the bedroom threshold. As usual, her long dark hair was immaculately braided and coiffed on top of her head. She'd foregone wearing one of her more usual elegant dresses in favor of a plain linen shift. She looked suspiciously like a nurse. Her lips quirked into a half-smile when she saw me.
"Penny had to go to Godolphin, since you are still not well. I volunteered to take Mordecai duty today. Have you had any water yet?"
She lifted the pitcher from a table along the wall.
"Help! She's here to kill me!"
I shouted half-heartedly at the now-closed door. Lady Rose was Elise Thornbear's daughter-in-law. It was a good bet she was in on the plot.
"That's enough of that,"
she snapped playfully.
"Your children told me you were a handful, but I didn't expect you to be this bad."
I turned my head away from her petulantly. "If you try to offer me a cup of water, I'll bite your hand," I mumbled. "I already feel like an overfull wineskin." I tried to lift a hand so she could see my sausage-like fingers, but it hurt too much, so I gave up. Rose moved closer and sat down on the chair next to the bed, then leaned over to look down at me.
"How low the mighty have fallen."
She graced my forehead with a light kiss before resuming her seat.
"How do you feel?"
she asked.
I grimaced. "How do I look? Multiply that by 10, and you'll be close."
A look of concern flickered across her face, but it vanished almost as quickly as it appeared. Most would have missed it entirely. Lady Rose was a consummate actress, and few ever saw the depths that hid behind her perfectly composed expression.
"You always did like to whine," she said, needling me. "When was the last time you relieved yourself?"
I gave her a look of mock embarrassment.
"You haven't even given me flowers yet, and you already want to know about my bladder."
"Mort," she said warningly.
"An hour ago," I lied. Her blue eyes flashed.
"Your daughter said it was last night."
"I snuck out of bed this morning when she stepped out. It was too embarrassing to do with her there."
"You can barely move,"
she observed. And then, without the least bit of embarrassment, she bent down and retrieved the chamber pot. I felt my face flush as she removed the lid.
"And this is empty."
I poured it out the window.
She gave me a severe look.
"It sounds like more dandelion tea for you, my lord."
Then she placed her hand on my brow.
"And perhaps some willow as well. You feel hot."
"Traitor,"
I hissed. Both of those tasted horrible, and I shuddered to think what the flavor would be if she mixed them. Rose smiled.
"I've been called worse. Do you think you can pee if we get you up out of that bed?"
She was a slender woman, and despite her towering personality, she couldn't possibly hope to hold me up.
"Wait," I asked suspiciously.
"Alyssa is waiting outside to help, if needed,"
she informed me.
Alyssa was one of my household servants, as well as Lady Rose's future daughter-in-law. She was also extremely young, less than 20 if I had to guess. The girl was incredibly athletic, a natural warrior, and I had no doubt she could have carried me by herself.
"If you drag her into this, you may never have grandchildren, Rose. Think of the trauma the girl will suffer if I have to drop my trousers in front of her."
She patted my leg through the bed covers.
"You aren't wearing trousers, and I survived the experience. I'm sure she will as well. This isn't my first time playing nursemaid to you, remember?
I did. In fact, I had to help nurse her back to health on one occasion, too. The more I thought about it, the more I realized how many life-threatening injuries I and everyone around me had been through. It was a sobering thought, and was also part of what made Rose family. I stared at her for a moment, studying the faint lines around her eyes, the silver streaks that had begun to sneak into her hair. Rose was getting older, just as I was, but it only seemed to enhance her beauty. "Rose, if I don't make it," I began.
"None of that," she barked firmly. "You will get better, Mordecai Alenio, so that I can torment you for years to come."
Standing, she headed for the door.
"I'll fetch Alyssa, and then we'll see if you can fill that pot."
A mischievous thought occurred to me as she was leaving. "Rose, wait. This is embarrassing, but I'm too weak. It's a heavy burden that I bear. I don't think I can lift it. I think perhaps I'll need more assistance than you might anticipate." I gave her a wicked grin. She clapped one hand in front of her mouth and feigned shock.
"Oh, no. If that's the case, I'm sure my slight strength will be insufficient. Perhaps I should call Graham to hold it for you."
"Never mind," I replied instantly. "I feel my strength returning already." Honestly, Rose was no fun sometimes, and she had an evil sense of humor. A minute later, she returned with Alyssa, but despite their best efforts, they weren't able to get me on my feet. It hurt too much, and my legs wouldn't take my weight. The day before, I'd managed it with only Penny's help, but I'd grown weaker. After some struggling and one or two painful screams on my part, they gave up. Instead, they rolled me onto my side and brought the chamber pot to me. It was a thoroughly humiliating experience. After a quarter of an hour, I hadn't managed to accomplish much, and they relented and took the pot away. The dandelion and willow bark tea came after that, and while I didn't like it, I drank it with a minimum of complaints. She hid it well, but something in Rose's posture told me that she was worried, and the tea was the only thing I could do to help relieve that, so I swallowed it quickly. I slept for a while after that, and when I awoke again, I opened my eyes slowly. Rose was still there, sitting at the bedside. Her hands were busy, tatting lace, I realized after a moment. She couldn't cook, I knew from experience, but Lady Rose was a product of her upbringing. She spent every spare moment keeping her hands busy. Over the course of a year, her dexterous fingers would produce a prodigious amount of lace to be used on collars and ruffs. Silently, I watched, admiring her skill. When she spoke, it surprised me, for I didn't think she'd noticed my wakefulness.
"Want to tell me about what happened on the island?"
"I'm sure you heard it all from Penny."
Her hands continued moving, and her eyes never wavered from their work. "Enough to know how much the entire thing upset her. One look at you is enough to understand why, but I'm sure she didn't tell me everything."
Lady Rose had a keen intellect and a knack for observation and inference. Despite being without mage sight, she always knew more about what was going on than any 10 people I could name put together. It was sometimes frightening how much she knew. On one occasion, I'd wondered if she had some secret ability to read minds. What's more, she only spoke a fraction of what she'd observed or figured out, so it was always a safe bet she knew far more than she said. When I didn't say anything, she prompted,
"Fill me in on what happened."
"Why? I'm sure you already know as much as I could tell."
"Because you need to," she responded.
She was right, and there was no better confessor a man could find than her. If anyone could understand, she would be the one. I felt trapped by my isolation, so I began to talk. A half an hour passed as I slowly detailed what had happened, describing everything, leaving nothing out, at least not until the end. When I stopped there, she picked up the thread for me.
"And then he kissed her, and she dropped the sword," she finished for me. "You weren't going to say it, were you?"
"She told you."
Rose nodded. "She was very relieved when you told her about his ability to influence emotions. But that wasn't the whole truth, was it, Mordecai?"
"Damn it. I had known this would happen. The woman missed nothing." "No, it isn't."
Reaching into her collar, she lifted out her own pendant, the same one that every resident of Castle Cameron and Washbrook wore. "I am not a wizard, but from what I remember of your explanation, these prevent that sort of manipulation."
I had given that explanation to her and others well over 15 years ago,
but she'd not forgotten. The enchanted pendants weren't perfect or foolproof. A centaur mage like my daughter Moira could get around their protection with a small delay, but a non-centaur like Tyrion or myself could not.
"Did you tell her?" I asked simply.
She pursed her lips.
"No, I think you did well to leave her with that comfort. The one caveat would be, if she realizes this on her own, things might be worse."
"What would she do?" I croaked, my voice having become much thicker. Rose stared sharply at me for a moment before her eyes softened.
"Idiot, is that what you think of her? She would do nothing except perhaps secretly hating herself. For all your brilliance, there are times when you surprise me with your stupidity, Mordecai."
My vision went blurry, and I couldn't respond.
"She loves you. She always has, and she always will. What happened to her was an instinctive physical reaction, something we are all prone to suffer from."
There was a hint of bitterness in her voice. Everything stopped. I stopped. My world, the internal spiral of doubt, stopped. In her words, I could sense something new, something that puzzled me, something that might turn my perceptions upside down. I glanced at Rose, waiting for her to continue. Her eyes bored into mine while an unknown time passed. Behind them was a burning intelligence so bright it would have been frightening if it had not also been tempered by an equal amount of compassion. Something passed between us, some understanding or feeling, though if I was asked to put words to it, I wouldn't know what to say. It was deep and subliminal, a feeling of comfort, of understanding, coupled with a certain wistfulness. Eventually, she reached out and wrapped my swollen hand with her soft, cool fingers, a touch of balm for my nerves.
"Humans are complicated creatures, Mordecai," she said at last. "We are not any one thing, but several at once. We can describe ourselves in terms of our animal desires, in terms of our rational decisions, and in terms of our higher emotions, the beast, the mind, and the heart. I'll use those labels to describe them, but remember, they are just words. In reality, in the deeper truth, they are all part of a single thing, a thing we cannot describe without losing some of its meaning. The best part of us is our heart, the place where our love comes from. And love is a thing that has many forms, but they are all the same, whether it is love for a child, love for your wife, or love for a friend, it is the same thing. We use different names for those relationships, not because the love is different, but because there are other elements tied to them, the lust of our inner beast in some cases, and the framework and rules imposed by the mind."
I had said something similar once, but often the truth means more when heard from the lips of another. Rose squeezed my hand and nodded, as though she could hear my inner monologue. And then she continued.
"Remember when Elaine was chasing you?"
Internally, I winced. Elaine Prathian was the daughter of my good friend Walter. For a time I had been her mentor and teacher. She had idolized me, and in her early adulthood, that admiration had become something more intense for her. A lovely young woman, she'd done everything in her power to force me to acknowledge her womanhood, until at last I had been forced to confront her, to explain why that physical attraction would never be answered, why there were some boundaries that I wouldn't cross. She had been hurt and embarrassed, but my firm words had put an end to an infatuation that could have only led to pain. I smiled ruefully. "I should have known that couldn't have slipped by unnoticed by your eyes."
"Not just mine, Maud. Penny knew as well, I have no doubt. I can still remember the day when you crushed poor Elaine's hopes."
I pursed my lips. It hadn't been a good day. Hurting people wasn't something I enjoyed, even when it was necessary.
"You even knew the day, eh?"
Rose nodded.
"I wasn't there. I didn't see it, but it was apparent from her behavior, and I can guess what happened. You were under a lot of pressure at the time, sick with worry, and as usual, you were keeping it from everyone. She probably approached you at some point when you were alone and offered her comfort in a very direct fashion. When you rejected her, it sent her into an angry depression."
It hadn't been quite that simple. The facts were correct, but too plain. I closed my eyes. She squeezed my hand.
"That was the easy version. In reality, you wanted her."
"No."
Rose tapped my forehead with her other hand, and then my heart.
"Not in here or here, no. But the beast, the animal that lives within men and women, it wanted her. I'm sure you struggled with it, but in the end, you did the right thing.
My breath escaped in a long sigh. Rose was far too perceptive.
In some ways, that was similar to what happened to Penny, but not in every way, said Rose. With Elaine, you had other feelings as well. You loved her as a student, as a pupil, as a friend. But in Penny's case, there was not even that. She was caught, trapped like a wild animal by a dangerous hunter. As a woman, she suffered a momentary surge, but there was no affection, no thought of betrayal, only fear and an involuntary rush of hormones. Rather than the pain of rejecting someone, as you experienced with Elaine, she got a sample of something far darker and more painful. She was nearly raped, and whatever reaction she had in those initial seconds, what followed would have been painful and destructive.
Silence followed, until finally I spoke. Thank you, Rose.
You already knew all that, she replied.
I needed to hear it, from someone whose heart and mind wasn't clouded by anger. She smiled faintly.
Glad I could help, but don't make the mistake of thinking I'm completely objective. I suffer from the cravings of my inner beast and the longings of my irrational heart as well, just like everyone else.
Fatigue was wearing on my consciousness, but I couldn't help but wonder. Even you, Rose. I've never known anyone with an intellect as clear and insightful as yours. I always imagined you lived without doubt, secure in your decisions, perfect in your composure. A shadow crossed her face, but was quickly gone.
Ever the poet, aren't you, Mort? Even half dead, you string your words together like pearls. You flatter me, but you know just as well as I do that a towering intellect is as often a curse as it is a blessing, and it is certainly no protection from the whispers of the heart.
Her words faded in and out for me. Sleep would take me again soon. Too relaxed, I asked a question I would never have dared voice normally. Were you ever tempted, Rose, when Dorian was still alive, or after? She sighed.
Dorian was perfect in every way, more so than I could ever be. I was infatuated with him as a girl. I loved him helplessly as a young woman, and nothing that life ever threw at us made me love him any less. I was devoted to him, and the years since he died have been long and hard.
She fell silent, and I fell asleep, my heart finally free of the guilt that had plagued me. In my dreams, I felt a ghostly touch on my lips, and Rose's voice echoed through the mists.
But I'm only human, Mort. I've been tempted, both before and since. But love is not so simple. My love is for my family. For your family, and it is too strong to allow me to hurt one of them for want of another.
Chapter 11. When I awoke, Rose was gone, but Alyssa was there, with more of that wretched dandelion tea in her hands. Penny returned soon after, and the late afternoon was a steady progression of family members in and out of the room. My mother, Irene and Connell, Moira, and even Humphrey was brought in for a brief visit. It was an awful lot for someone as sick as I was to manage, and I didn't complain. Instead, I asked Penny about the one notable exception. Where's Matthew? She sighed.
He's working on a project.
Ah.
For you, actually, she added.
Me?
The portal to the Queen's Chambers in Albemarle, explained Penny. I mentioned it to him, and he took it upon himself to handle it for you. He won't admit it, of course, but I think it's his way of trying to help, checking something off your list of obligations.
A knock came at the door. Penny rose and opened it, to find Elise Thornbear standing outside.
Time to check on our patient, said the old woman with an easy smile.
I groaned from the bed. Penny motioned her in with a wide sweep of her hand.
I'll leave him to you, then. I have a few things to take care of. Let me know when you finish and I'll come back. We've been trying to keep someone with him around the clock.
She stepped out and closed the door before I could protest, leaving me alone with the fiendish old crone. I would never have called Elise a crone out loud, though. She was Dorian's mother, and when we were younger, such a phrase might have earned me a strapping. She'd had a firm hand with discipline back then, whether it was her child or, in my case, someone else's.
"Good evening, Lord Cameron," she said in a bright tone.
The formality was a ruse, as was the cheeriness. It meant she had something terrible in store for me. And Penny had left me alone with her. This merely served to confirm my suspicions. All the women in my life were in on it together, They were out to get me, and Elise Thornbear was their leader and chief torturer. I drank all the tea they gave me, I said defensively.
Mm-hmm,
she said neutrally. Then the fiend pulled the covers up from the foot of the bed, exposing my feet to the cold air. She eyed my feet clinically while I shivered, then replaced the covers. A reasonable man might think that was enough, but she pulled the blankets from my chest next.
Turn on your side for me, she ordered.
I tried. When I failed, she assisted me, her long bony arms both stronger and gentler than one would expect. With her help, I made it, though I groaned loudly several times during the process. She pulled up my shirt and studied my backside for a minute. Then she began lightly prodding me with her fingers, placing them here and there. When she reached my lower back, I let out an involuntary scream. She stopped and pulled my shirt down. Then she eased me onto my back and covered me, tucking me into the bed as though I was a small child. She sat down and said nothing. The silence drew out for a while, making me slightly uncomfortable. At least Thornbear was something of a force of nature, hard-willed and indomitable. In her youth, she'd been a lady of the evening, poisoner, prostitute, and assassin. Later, she'd married Graham Thornbear and rejoined the respectable circles of polite society and the nobility, but she'd never forgotten the lessons she learned. As Lady Thornbear, she had never feared to get her hands dirty, and she frequently used her skills to treat the wounded and ease the pain of the dying. But looking at her now, she just looked old, defeated. Hers wasn't the demeanor of a lady trying to cheer or tease a patient to keep their spirits up.
How is your mind, Mordecai? She asked suddenly. Are your thoughts still clear?
Clear enough, I answered. I'm sleeping a lot, but I'm good for short sprints of conversation, if that's what you're asking.
Many physicians wouldn't tell you what I'm about to. They'd talk to your family first, she began. Then again, I think most of them are fools. If you're still clear-headed, then you should be the one to make the choice.
Listen, Elise. Shh, she snapped. Yes, ma'am, I responded immediately. The habits of childhood die hard.
This isn't easy for me. I've lost too many, more than any woman should. My husband, my son, Mark, Ginny, James, and too many other friends to count. Every time is different, but one thing I've come to realize over the long years is that when possible, it's best not to pretend. Honest conversation and honest goodbyes save a lot of regret for those left behind. Do you understand?
Wait, Elise, I said. This isn't as bad as it seems. Whatever you think, in a week or maybe a little more, I'll be able to fix this.
You don't have a week, Mort, she said bluntly.
Lifting my hand, she showed me how swollen my fingers were.
Your kidneys have shut down.
I frowned. They weren't injured.
Doesn't matter, she responded. Massive trauma can cause it. Breaking down and reabsorbing blood from bruising or internal injuries is very taxing for the kidneys. Yours have been overwhelmed. That's why you're swelling. That's why you can't piss. Your blood is turning into poison. In a few days, you'll be delirious and in tremendous pain. From there, it's just a horrid waiting game. But 2 or 3 days more, and you'll be dead. The worst of it is that there isn't anything I can give you at that point that will ease the symptoms. Only death will release you, and your family won't be able to do anything but watch.
I've been dead before, I said callously.
That's not the point, she replied. The point is how much your family will suffer watching it. That's why I'm talking to you now, while you're still clear enough to decide for yourself.
I didn't say anything, preferring instead to stare at the ceiling.
Word has been sent to Gareth Galen,
Elise informed me.
Matthew said he could possibly do something.
I interrupted her. He won't come. Elise nodded.
Matthew said the same, but your wife sent word to him anyway. Are there any others that might have some ability to help?
There were. Aurelianta, if she possessed the Shihar's knowledge of spell-weaving techniques for healing. But she was a tree now. She couldn't travel, and even if she could, it would take weeks just to pose the question to her. The only other possibility was Tyrion himself, and I would rather die than accept his aid. Even if he was willing to come, there was no telling what horror he would ask for to repay him. I shook my head negatively. Elise bowed her head sadly.
I expected as much.
Reaching into her pouch, she pulled out a glass vial.
In a day or two, you'll start to itch all over. When that happens, you'll know it's almost too late. Madness will follow soon after. Talk to your family. Give them peace. Then drink this.
Pulling my eyes away from the ceiling, I looked directly at her. The tough old woman had tears on her cheeks. This had to be incredibly difficult for her. I remembered all too well how hard it had been for me when I had helped my own father die peacefully. "Elise," I said quietly, "thank you. You've done the right thing. Remember that in the nights to come. I haven't quite given up yet. I've cheated death too many times to believe it's my time. But if the worst comes, this will make it easier." She wiped her face.
"Graham and I always wanted more children, but it just didn't happen. You and Mark helped fill that gap. The two of you were like sons to me. If my husband were still here, he would tell you to be proud. You've done well with what you were given."
She rose to her feet and walked to the door.
"Remember, when you start to itch all over, delirium will follow soon after. Wait too long and you'll lose the choice."
Then she was gone, and it was hard to ignore the itching in my hands. Damn it. Another nap, and I found Penny sitting beside me again. How long did I sleep? Time wasn't my friend anymore, if it ever had been. "I need to see Mother," I told her.
"What did Elise say?" asked Penny, concern in her features. "She said you would tell us what you talked about."
Even dying, I was more worried about my wife's reaction than I was the Grim Reaper showing up on my doorstep. I could see no way this conversation would end well. "She said to use my time well." Her hands tightened into fists.
"I'll kill him, Penny. This is no idle threat," she said, cutting me off.
"You can't."
"Maybe not alone," she admitted. "But I'm not alone. Do you realize how much raw power sleeps under this roof? How many dragons we have?"
"You'd start a war," I cautioned.
"I don't care," she yelled. "Don't forget the Queen either. If we don't have enough here, I'll see to it that all of Lothian goes to war with us. We'll burn every tree on that fucking island, and when that's done, I'll see Tyrion gutted like a fish."
"No, you won't," I said tiredly. "Are you planning to kill Linarala's mother too? She's innocent. The Shi'ar are innocent. Even Tyrion didn't mean for this to happen."
"There has to be some way,"
she muttered, her voice thick. "Several," I replied, "but none that allow me to remain human." Her eyes lit with hope, but I shook my head immediately. "No, I've been a monster before. I'd rather go gracefully than accept that," I told her.
"But you came back," she insisted. "You could do it again."
She was referring to the immortality enchantment, the magic that had once trapped me in an undying body. I'd been forced to steal life from the mortals around me to retain a semblance of humanity. And I'm not sure I came back last time, I thought, at least not all the way. With the help of two wizards, and one of them an archmage. Gareth won't be doing me any more favors, and I wouldn't ask it of him if he were willing. They got lucky last time. I could just as easily have been all three of us dead.
Penny wasn't listening. "Can Matthew do it?"
"Not with my consent."
She smiled through her tears. "We'll just wait until the delirium sets in."
"The enchantment creates a snapshot of the mind at the moment it goes into effect. You'd be stuck with a madman," I told her. "Come here." I waved my hands vaguely, urging her to draw close. When she leaned in, I kissed her cheek. "There's still hope, but I'm not doing anything stupid. If it comes to it, I want you to be strong and accept whatever comes." The dam broke, but Penny didn't cry long. After a few minutes, she pulled herself together and stood straight. She sent for my mother first, and I spent a considerable time visiting with her. I didn't tell my mother I was dying. That was too much, even for me, but I'm sure she sensed it in my words somehow. We spent an hour talking, and over the course of that period, I made certain I left none of my feelings unspoken. She had to know what she'd meant to me. My kids were a different matter. They had no inhibitions about blurting out what their intuition told them. Irene was the worst. No matter how cheerful I was, she wasn't buying any of it. She was inconsolable, and she cried all the way out the door, tearing at my heart. Connell took the news quietly, but he too was a mess by the time he left. Moira kept her composure, but like her mother, she insisted on proposing an outlandish scheme to preserve my mind, if not my life. I rejected her idea outright. I had no desire to die and be replaced by some sort of spell copy, which is what her plan amounted to. Matthew was the last to visit me, long after the sun had set. He had waited until last because he was caught up in his newest project. or perhaps he was merely reluctant. When he entered, his expression was blank.
The portal to Albemarle is almost done, he informed me.
I nodded. That's a load off my mind.
He laughed lightly.
I'm sure you have bigger things to worry about.
I smiled.
Maybe, but I can't think of anything.
Everyone thinks you're dying, he stated bluntly. The whole house has gone crazy.
But not you,
I observed. He sighed. I don't know. It doesn't feel real. Maybe later I'm going to run around the house crying and screaming, though.
No, you'll ignore it until it bites you in the dark a few weeks later, I thought. And that's why I worry about you more than them. You'll try to face your grief alone.
Gareth has refused to come, said Matthew.
As expected.
He walked to the window, looking out at the fall scenery. Elise says it's your kidneys that are the problem.
Yeah, I replied. I wanted to say more, to say 100 different things, but I didn't know how to talk to him. In some ways he was like my father. He communicated through actions and ideas. Feelings were not part of his vocabulary. My son tapped his temple.
The Shi'ar had ways to cleanse the blood. It's all in here. We could study and adapt their spell weaving, create an enchantment to do the same thing.
And it would take weeks, if not months. The information was there, but understanding it, converting it and using it, those were much harder things to do. Possessing knowledge is one thing, using it another, I said simply.
He nodded. Then I'd better get started. He walked toward the door, but paused before he reached it. Walking back to the bed, he leaned over and hugged me briefly.
I grinned. If I'd known dying would get me hugs, I'd have done it sooner.
Matthew smirked. Don't get used to it. You'll be better soon.
Chapter 12
The next day I was miserable. Despite my exhaustion, I hadn't been able to sleep. The itching that had started in my palms had spread, first to my feet and then to my legs and torso. It was maddening. Desperately, I longed to leap from the bed and throw myself into a cold bath. That was the only relief that I could imagine would stop the hot, itching sensation that crawled over my skin. Today I was planning to meet with my friends, Cyan, Chad, Peter, and several dozen others. Then I'd spend the last hours with my family. I was trying to decide which to call for first when I heard a commotion in the hall.
Who let you in here?
That was Penny's voice.
He's sick, too sick for this.
The reply came in Chad Grayson's rough tones.
Your daughter did, and I need to speak to him if he ain't dead yet.
I told you no this morning,
shouted my wife.
And yet you ain't done a damn thing,
he responded.
Listening to them, I worried for fear she might decapitate the surly huntsman. Penny had never been particularly fond of him, and she was highly stressed currently.
I have to think,
she answered.
Lancaster is missing, you crazy bitch. Someone's got to decide what to do.
What? I knew I must have misheard him, and the last part. I listened hard, expecting to hear steel being drawn. Prickly as he was, even Chad wouldn't normally speak to Penny like that.
Penny's response came in a measured tone.
My husband is dying.
Then let him decide, said Chad, his tone bitter and wry. They probably need something to take his mind off it.
The slap that followed was loud enough for me to hear through the door, and a momentary silence followed.
Could you people shut up? I can't focus with all this racket.
That was Matthew.
The sound of feet told me that the rest of the household was probably emerging to join the ruckus.
Get Sir Graham and Sir Cyan, said Penny. Take your hunters as well. Examine the area and report back.
This needs a wizard, milady, said Chad gruffly. I just returned, and I can't make heads or tails of it. What about him?
Matthew's voice answered. I'm busy.
A flurry of suggestions followed, but Matthew shot them all down.
I said no, I need them here.
Moira spoke then, suggesting they send one of the Praetheans. I missed the rest of the argument, because just then a purple cloud came through the window with a roar of wind. The sound drowned out their voices. It was so sudden that I was alarmed, but Dorian stood up from the chair beside the bed.
Get out, he yelled at the cloud.
I didn't listen, but Dorian had brought the bellows from my father's smithy. Setting up at the foot of the bed, he proceeded to pump it until the rushing air pushed the cloud back out the window.
Once that was done, he sat back down.
Now, where were we?
I smiled at him. We were talking about Mark. Dorian shook his head sadly.
I told you, he's gone. He disappeared when Lancaster vanished.
That made no sense. Looking up, I watched the geese flying overhead. Then, why are the birds still there? I asked. The rest of the day was confusing. It seemed as though hundreds of people came and went, and there were always at least 20 people in my room, all talking at the same time. There was no quiet until sundown. As the sky turned orange and the sun began to vanish behind the mountains, everyone left, until only Elise remained, staring down at me with sad eyes.
You waited too long, she said sadly. Now it's too late.
I tried to answer, but my voice wouldn't work. It's not my fault. It's these ants. They're all over me. And then darkness covered my eyes. A faint light irritated me. When I tried to look at it, it faded. But as soon as I turned my head, it followed, keeping me from resting. There was something I'd forgotten, something I needed to do. Penny's face came into focus. She sat huddled beside the bed. Her head turned, and the candlelight caught her eyes for a moment, so I knew she wasn't asleep. What bothered me more was that the shadows were moving behind her. They were long and distorted, but I could see the knives in their hands. Trying to warn her, I opened my mouth, but whatever I managed to say, it wasn't enough. She couldn't see the shadows. The door opened, and light exploded into the room, setting my eyes on fire and sending the ants that covered me scurrying for cover. I might have screamed, but I heard nothing. After an eternity, the flames died down, and I saw my children against the wall. No, there were too many, and some of them weren't mine. Why is Graham here, and Alyssa too? They were staring at me with empty eyes, and that was when I realized they were dead. Desperate, I scanned their faces. Irene, Carissa, Connell, Graham, Alyssa, all dead. Even Rose was there. But Matthew and Moira were missing. Maybe they escaped. I stared at their dead bodies, slumped along the walls and in the corners of the room, and when my heart could take no more, I began to cry. Some of the bodies moved, rising from their eternal rest. They had become Shigrath. I struggled to rise from the bed, but a demon was pressing me down, forcing me onto the mattress. It had Cyan's face, but none of his gentleness. His hands were burning brands that seared me wherever they touched, but I didn't have the strength to escape them, so I ignored the pain and relaxed. My hand found something under the covers, something cool and hard. Drawing it out, I saw a glass vial between my fingers. The liquid within shone golden in the candlelight. Hope blossomed in my chest. Sitting back up, I called for Penny, but my cry was answered by the demon, and this time it had a helper just as big, wearing Graham's face like a skin mask. They forced me down, but I held on tightly to the vial, to my salvation. And then they vanished, their darkness fleeing before the light that shone around Penelope. Evil could not bear the sight of her or remain in her presence.
What is it, Mort? She asked,
her face hovering above me, too far to reach. Her eyes were wet and her cheeks red. Did they hurt her? Holding out the vial, I tried to explain. I found it, Penny. Help me drink it. It's magic. I can save us. There's still hope. She smiled, and sunshine broke through the window, cascading over us. Of course, she whispered. Pressing it back into my hand, she helped me lift it to my lips, and something cool trickled down my throat, fire made into liquid ice. My power swelled within me, and I raised my hand to the ceiling, strong once more. Blasting a hole through the roof, I took Penny's hand in mine and we flew. A door opened in the heavens, and I saw Moira ahead of us, blocking our path to freedom. Except it wasn't her. It looked like her on the outside, but within I could see a monster, a serpent that had eaten her up from the inside out. It smiled, showing me fangs and leering at me with serpentine eyes.
Father, can you hear me?
It was her voice, but now I could see there were two of her. Let me go, I ordered, for there were shackles on me now, dragging me down and binding me to the bed. Matthew stood behind me, hidden in a black robe, while Linarana stood to my right. The two Moiras were on my left, and Connell and Irene were at my feet. All of them were in robes, and I realized then that they meant to sacrifice me. I would die in the same way that Tyrion should have, at the hands of my children. Then Arala leaned over me,
her silver hair falling across my chest, almost hiding the silver dagger in her hands. It glittered in the light as she lifted her hands to strike. The blade hovered there as she chanted in Aerolith.
So that the Elenial may live, you must die.
Then she plunged it into my chest, and agony screamed in my heart and through my veins. Powerless even to cry out, I stared into the eyes of my murderous offspring as the world dimmed around me, my life leaking out of my chest, a river that they were devouring like feral beasts. Unlike an ordinary murder, this one went on for ages, my heart somehow pounding around the blade in my chest while I slowly died in silent steps. Despite their betrayal, I forgave them, and as my life bled away, I spoke my final words. I love you. Thankfully, oblivion found me after that. The sweet embrace of death.
Chapter 13. The afterlife turned out to be more pleasant than I'd expected. I floated along for some time on a white cloud while the trees shed their leaves like rain. Warm sun and cold wind competed for my skin's attention. I stared at the scenery, unable to comprehend the beauty before me. A young man walked in front of me. My son, Connell. I wasn't certain until he turned his head to look back at me. Then he spoke, but it was Chad Grayson's voice that emerged.
How long are you going to keep drooling like that? You look like a fucking idiot.
I frowned. Connell's lips hadn't moved. Something wasn't right. Had he spoken in my mind? On impulse, I tilted my head back. My vision was filled by the sky, a gray and blue masterpiece filled with clouds rushing in the wind. In the center of it was Chad's face, staring back at me.
Yeah, those are clouds, asshole, he said to me.
Then Connell chimed in.
I really wish you wouldn't speak to him like that.
Chad waved a hand dismissively.
He doesn't know what I'm saying anyway. We'll know when he's really waking up when he gets pissed off.
I started laughing.
See? He's got no clue. He's still a moron, said Chad.
It wasn't a cloud I was riding on, but a palanquin of sorts. Really, it was more of a cushioned bed on two poles, and the two of them were carrying me, though they'd since stopped. We were in the meadow below my house on the mountainside. I still felt weird, but my mind was functioning. It was obvious I wasn't dead. Looking up at Chad again, I spoke.
If this is heaven, should you be here?
Connell snickered, and I winked at him. Meanwhile, Chad's eyes narrowed as he studied me, wondering if I were really regaining my self-awareness. Finally, the hunter replied,
You're right about that. This ain't heaven, not a tavern in sight. That's why I brought this.
He held up a small metal flask and unscrewed the top, taking a swallow.
Why are we on the mountainside?
I asked. It seemed a strange place for a sickbed. Connell answered,
Elise thought you might benefit from some sunshine.
Chad chuckled.
More like your wife got sick of looking at that dumbass face of yours.
Despite his rough tongue, I found myself smiling like an idiot.
Is she all right? How about everyone else? How long have I been out of it?
Chad summarized quickly.
She's fine, they're fine, and you've been a gibbering idiot long enough to piss me off pretty good.
He addressed my son next.
Since he's talking, we'd best get him back to the house. The Queen'll want to know.
Connell picked up his end of the litter, and they started trudging back uphill while I pondered what had been said.
The Queen? Is she here? I asked. Yeah, said Chad. While you were sick, they all got together and decided to throw you a fucking party. They're up there now, planning decorations and deciding which noble pricks to put on the guest list.
Master Grayson,
snapped Connell, outraged. Then he spoke to me directly.
Matthew finished the portal to Albemarle, and Her Majesty came to observe your recovery.
Nodding, I looked back at Chad.
While I was sick, I had some interesting dreams. I thought you tried to see me, but Penny wouldn't let you in. Something about Lancaster having vanished.
The huntsman winced.
That was no dream. She damn near broke my neck. And Lancaster.
Connell broke in.
That's why he's so mad. It's gone. He and Sir Cyan and a lot of the hunters went to scout the area after that. Most of them didn't come back. Sir Cyan was badly wounded, and he says the missing are either dead or...
He stopped, so I prompted him.
Or what?
Chad finished for him.
Or eaten. Something bad came out of the forest. I'll be damned if I could tell you what it is.
Walter and Elaine were with them, Connell informed me. They haven't come back either.
Alarmed, I asked. When was this? 4 days ago. Same day your wife tried to break my neck, answered the old archer. Arrows had no effect on them. Their hides were tougher than granite, and they just about ignored everything that old Walter and his daughter threw at them too.
Tell me exactly what happened, I ordered.
One of my boys came back that morning, told us that Lancaster was missing. Walter checked the World Road portal and tried the teleportation circles, and none of them were working. After your wife nearly killed me, I went back with Cyan and a group of scouts along with the two wizards, began Chad. When we got there, there wasn't no sign of what should have been there. Lancaster was gone, just as neat as you please. The road just dead-ended against a forest the likes of which I ain't never seen. Trees as big as two men laying head to toe, huge ferns and grass so thick you'd think no one had ever been there before. I sent two men south and two to the north to try to see how far it went. The rest of us went straight in, trying to reach Castle Lancaster, or at least see if it was still there. We barely got 500 yards in before something jumped out and tore poor Samuel in half. Damn thing was as big as a bear, a really big fucking bear, but it didn't have fur. Its skin was hard and crusty like it was covered in gravel. It ripped into the guys in front and nearly had me for dinner, but Cyan ducked in and took one of its legs off midway down. It fell forward and then slapped him with its other paw and pitched him 10 foot into a tree. Damn near killed him, armor or no armor. I had my bow out by then, but arrows didn't do nothing, didn't even piss it off. And that one was too hurt to follow, though, so we started backing out of there, till its mate showed up and bit Fergus's head clean off. Walter's girl hit it with lightning and he tried to burn it, but it just started roaring and tearing into everyone. I was dragging Cyan by the feet so I couldn't do much. We just ran. Everyone left anyway. We didn't stop until we were gone from there and 100 yards more besides. That's when I noticed Walter and Elaine weren't with us.
Chad stopped then, his features hard.
But they weren't all dead. Not yet. We could still hear them, he said slowly. One of them kept screaming for almost a quarter of an hour, like it was eating him alive, and we just kept walking. Couldn't look back, couldn't even look at each other. That was 4 days ago, and ain't no one gone near there since.
The old hunter fell silent at last.
I didn't know what to say, but Connell spoke up, coming to the master hunter's defense.
They wanted to go back. Mum and Graham wanted to go with the house guard and the hunters, but the queen showed up first. She wouldn't let them, not without magical support.
As much as I hated the thought of my children going into harm's way, I didn't understand. Even with Walter and Elaine missing, there were still George Prathian, Linarala, Matthew, Moira, and even Connell. They could have gone back with the troops, Sir Graham and the dragons. If they'd returned immediately, the chances they could recover some of those lost would have been much higher. My son must have seen the confusion on my face.
They were sick. Well, a lot of them anyway. Graham, Irene, Matthew, and even Linarala.
The odds of that didn't seem likely. All of them at the same time.
Connell nodded. Off and on. They took turns.
We were almost to the house, but I motioned for them to stop. I wasn't ready to face everyone yet. I'd already noticed that my mage sight was back. It had taken a moment because it was such a normal part of my life that it was usually easier to notice its absence. Examining myself, both with my eyes and my arcane senses, I could see that I was a wreck. The swelling in my hands and feet was better, but still present, and my skin was an ugly mess of red blotchy areas and lighter patches. My hair was remarkably well kept, a sign that someone had been grooming me, but I had no doubt there would be bags under my eyes if I looked in a mirror. Trying to rise had shown me how weak my arms were, and I knew without trying that my legs wouldn't hold my weight. "Go wait by the door," I told my keepers. "I'll join you in a minute."
"Dad," protested Connell, "you can't walk yet. You'll fall for sure."
Chad put a hand on the teen's shoulder. "Leave him be, lad. It's every man's right to make an ass of himself. If he falls and breaks something, we can just laugh and pack him back onto his bed here."
He leaned in and whispered in my ear.
"I'm hoping you know what you're doing. If you do hurt yourself, that mad dog wife of yours will have my balls."
He led Connell away while I grinned.
What I was about to do was about the simplest form of metamagic, returning my body to its former healthy state. Unlike most other things an archmage might do, this didn't require me to become anything other than myself. My mind didn't have to encompass something foreign.
In comparison to the difficulty of healing using ordinary wizardry, it was absurdly easy. But I didn't want to just return to my most recent former health. I wanted to make some improvements, and that could be tricky. The body, or rather the part of the mind that represents our body to us,